Fork Tales, a podcast that feeds ideas to the food and beverage world. Fork Tales is brought to you by Vigor, a branding and advertising agency focused on the restaurant and hospitality industry, and by Quench, a food and beverage advertising agency that specializes in evolving iconic food and beverage brands. Learn more, visit vigorbranding.com and quenchagency.com. If you love what we're serving up, please give Fork Tales a 5-star review on your podcast service of choice. Think of it as a tip for good service.
Hi, welcome to Fork Tales. Today, we're joined by Madeline Alfano, CEO and owner of Maria's Italian Kitchen, a family-founded, California-based brand known for classic Italian comfort food. We'll talk with Madeline about growing up in the family business, evolving a beloved Italian concept, and some of the best dishes on Maria's menu. Madeline, welcome to Fork Tales. Thank you so much for joining us. And you're an old friend, so I'm going to call you Maddie.
Please do. Everyone does. But after 5 minutes of an introduction, they'll call me Maria.
Yeah, I'm going to make sure. That's a great way to start. Tell us how Maria's started and how you ended up the CEO and owner and why it's not called Maddie's.
That's right. Well, I was born in Hoboken. My parents moved from Hoboken to Long Island and opened up small Italian delicatessens. And then when they moved to Los Angeles in 1968, they took over a very rundown grocery store in Brentwood Village, which is Sunset and Barrington. It's really the most exclusive part of Los Angeles at the time and still is today. And so it was my mom and dad. My dad was behind the meat department and my mom was doing the groceries. And, you know, she'd look at, you know, the vegetables, you know, if there was a little zucchini that was touched or an eggplant, she goes, why aren't they buying this? It's still good to eat. You know, are they painting it? You know, we should. But she would take it in the back and she would cook it. And then she'd make her meatballs. My dad was making the sausage from scratch. She'd make sausage and peppers. And people walk into the grocery store and they'd say, what's that smell? I said, oh, yeah, my mom. You know, we were all just as an aside, labor laws. All the five kids worked in the grocery store.
A good Italian family right there. That's good.
I was in the milk room putting the milk and dusting the grocery shelves and, you know, marking up. When you had the Garvey, you had to mark up all of the blue ink on the cans. Yep. Anyway, so all the kids were there and people say, what's that smell? Oh, yeah, my mom's cooking, you know, sausage and peppers. Oh, can we buy that? So she started selling that. Then they would go home and make lasagnas and eggplant and put them in the freezer. Within a month, my mother said to my father, Donald, her name's Maria, we got to take the garage and convert it into a kitchen. So mm-hmm. They took a one-car garage, less than 500, wasn't a garage, 250 square feet, very small, and they converted into the first Maria's Kitchen. So that's how it started, and that was in 1972.
That's awesome.
So it took them a couple of years to get the funding in. And so all the kids, you know, I was going to school locally and we would walk up, we'd work in the grocery store. Then we'd walk in, it was called the Takeout, Village Mart Takeout. And then because the rest, the grocery store was called the Village Mart. And mm-hmm. Then on the window at the last minute, the guy that was painting the signs because they couldn't afford a sign said, we should really call this Maria's. So he just painted Maria's on the
That's
window.
Awesome.
And it became Maria's Italian Kitchen.
You know, I grew up in Hershey, and it's a big Italian area. In fact, they have an area called Little Italy in Hershey. And so there's a store that I grew up with, and it's still there today. It's called Pronio's. It's a little grocery, private-owned grocery store. They do the same thing. They make a lot of their own stuff, Stromboli. They have all the best meats, cheeses, and it's phenomenal. So whenever I go see my mom, I always go to Pronio's and stock up on, you know, get a ball of provolone or get the prosciutto, the parma, whatever, you know, it's just phenomenal. So I totally get that.
I remember when my parents would hang the provolone.
Oh, yeah.
And then they'd have to put a bag underneath because the oils would drip out.
Oh, dripping out.
Yeah. Hard and delicious. Yep.
I'm getting hungry. So you grew up in the business. Okay. So what did you learn early on about guests, operations that still guides how you lead the company today?
So I grew up in the business with the intent of not being in the business because I saw how hard my parents worked. It was a 7-day a week operation. We didn't have, you know, if Mother's Day was on a Sunday, we celebrated on a Monday, you know, and all the holidays were celebrated on Monday. So what I learned, my mom and dad, you're in marketing, but they taught me marketing at a grassroots level. My dad would have a little composition notebook by the cash register. And if someone came in and said, "Hey, Don, do you have," it was at the time Häagen-Dazs ice cream. He said, "Nah, I never heard of it." You write it down. Somebody else comes, "Yeah, I got Häagen-Dazs." Yeah. So if three people asked him for that item, he would buy it. Mm-hmm. And we put it in the in the store. And I remember, and it was a very affluent neighborhood. We had a lot of celebrities. And I remember Steve McQueen's wife coming in and asking for Contrexeville and Evian water imported from France. And my dad's like, "This is insane." He's like, "Who's going to pay for water?"
Right.
From France. Yeah. But they ordered it. They ordered it for her, right? And it was like, I think at the time it was like, I don't know, 89 cents a bottle or 99 cents a bottle. It was crazy. So I learned from them about the marketing. People will tell you what they want to buy. But more importantly, because it was an affluent neighborhood, I learned from my parents that you treat everyone the same. And we had, he would say, from the Gettys to the Gardners, because John Paul Getty's family would shop there. Their major Duomo would come in and do all the grocery shopping. And then I would deliver it in the station wagon. And then the Gardners would come in. And my dad and mom treated everyone the same with respect. And I think that's really important today, because whoever walks through your front door, you need to embrace them and make them feel really good about who they are and where they are.
That's excellent. That's great. That's great advice. And that was at the store. And obviously you carry that through to the restaurants.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I opened my first restaurant in 1985, the first sit-down restaurant. So the Village Mart, or the original Maurice Kitchen, was strictly a takeout. It was way ahead of, and we had delivery drivers. And in our grocery store, we would deliver groceries. I was the original Instacart girl. My parents
were ahead of
totally ahead of the curve.
Yeah, you're doing Instacart and DoorDash before there was such a thing.
Exactly.
That's awesome.
50-cent tip for delivering seven bags of groceries and a dollar tip for delivering one pizza. Go figure.
Yeah, that's funny. So every business has a turning point. Sometimes they're just absolutely like mind blowing. You know, for me, you know, I remember there was a point in time where I had just bought my first building for my first agency. I had a partner there. He was a 50% shareholder. We ran into some legal HR issues with the person, and I had to make a decision to buy him out when the business wasn't doing well. And all it was debt. And it was like the scariest thing I've ever done in my life. I mean, the scariest, but I did it. And we never looked back. The business just took off from there, and it's just been an amazing ride. So, what is your turning point story? What happened for you? Like, what? Tell me a story about you.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Michael. When I first opened my first sit down restaurant, and I was 28, I always say I had four strikes against me. I was 28. I was a blonde woman opening a restaurant. In an area that there weren't many restaurants there. So what I did at that point, and all of my friends said, "Are you crazy? What do you know about the restaurant business? You got a psychology degree from UCLA. You know, how's that going to help you in the restaurant business? You're not a chef. You didn't go to business school, blah, blah, blah." And so I thought, you know, I'm common sense, right? And so I wrote manuals for every position as if I had 100 restaurants. I wanted to be very clear in the communication to the people that I was working with. And I had a very interesting lesson, the first, you know, because it's a sit-down restaurant now. So what I learned, and I'll talk about another turning point issue, which was the 1994 earthquake, but we'll get back to this first. So I had 13 tables, or maybe 12 tables. So I had 24, you know, salt and pepper shakers. So I put them out and I said to one of the guys, I said, "Put salt and pepper in these shakers," because to put on the table. So I walk away and I come back and I look at the 24 shakers, and there was salt and pepper in each shaker. So I said to myself, I laughed. I thought, okay, well, we can use this in the kitchen, but I wasn't clear in saying, make 12 with salt and 12 with pepper I said, put salt and pepper in these pepper shakers.
Oh my gosh.
I thought to myself, okay, I have to pretend that someone's coming from Mars and they're going to work in this restaurant. And how are they going to know how to do that? So it was very clear at that point to have clear, constant, consistent communication. Mm-hmm. But a turning point for me was in 1994, I opened my first restaurant in 1985. And then a customer came in and said, hey, and it was a failing. I didn't look to open in Sherman Oaks. I had a deli in Brentwood, and a customer said, hey, I own a property in Sherman Oaks. Would you come and give me advice? Because I don't think the guy that's working there knows what he's doing. And he didn't. Nice guy, actually hired him. The name of his place was called Joe Mama's. So I hired Mike, Joe Mama. And then we converted that to the first sit down. But so I opened that restaurant in 1985. And then in 1988, I was pregnant with my first child, and a customer came in and said, hey, there's this failing restaurant in Woodland Hills. Would you go? You know, I own the property. Would you come help me? And so then I went there and I bought that location. At the time, Max was born. We didn't know that he had any issues, but I opened the restaurant he was born in February. I opened a restaurant in May, and in June, UCLA genetics team said there was, you know, he's developmentally delayed and there's lots of issues and, you know, pretty much you should institutionalize him. And I said, like, you don't know me. There's no way I'm going to put my brand new baby. So I'm a new mom with a handicap. Well, at the time we called them handicapped, two restaurants. And I just said, you know what, we're going to get through this. And so I think hiring my focus on always finding the best people for the job. But what was interesting about that, my Uncle Matty owned a restaurant in Mateo's, and my Uncle Mikey was a maitre d', and he knew everyone. So through our food connections, I found the best people. When I had to go to genetics at UCLA, there was a doctor that was, and this all ties into the whole hospitality, bringing people into your family.
Right.
So there's this top geneticist, and her name's Dr. Barbara Lippi. And so they said, oh, there's a 6-month wait. They said, Dr. Lippi. I said, Barbara Lippi? So I call her up. I said, hey, Barbara, this is Madeline from the Village Mart grocery store. She calls me back and I told her what happened. She says, you know, when I graduated from medical school, my parents, they lived in an apartment down on Barrington Avenue, which shopped my parents' grocery store. Your mother made the entire dinner as a gift, and I will never forget that. Now, I never knew that, right? So it's about that. But in 1994, we were about to open we had opened another restaurant in Encino in 89 and 94 in Northridge. We were ready to open. We're in construction. Met the biggest earthquake since the 70s hits. My Woodland Hills store's burned down. My Sherman Oaks store is damaged to beyond belief. there was no water. And so I had, I always had extra Arrowhead water in my house. We brought the 5-gallon water to the restaurants. So in Sherman Oaks, we prepared food for all of the neighbors that lost their homes. We brought it to the parks, and we moved our team from Woodland Hills to the Northridge. We were ready to open. So there was a pause, and then we opened on Valentine's Day. And what that turning point for me was that regardless of the circumstances, if you stay focused, and as a leader, we have to be very, you know, very thoughtful about what's happening around us and keep an even emotional keel. I always say it's like a duck in water. You know, underneath the water, the duck's paddling, but on top, you're just like smooth sailing. So for me, that was a really big turning point. Like, could we do this? Should we do this and continue to grow? And we opened that restaurant. It's very successful. And then we relocated our Woodland Hills location. So it was a big challenge. And by the way, my insurance agent did not cover me properly. So I was not covered with that. So it was a real challenge for us.
That's incredible. And you know, those kind of things define you ultimately, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they help define your leadership style. They help define everything. So if we asked your team to describe your leadership style, what do you think they'd say?
Well, it's interesting because I'm very casual, as you can see. And you know me for over 20 years now.
A long
very
time. Casual. Yep.
And so I sometimes it's confused for not being serious. And I always tell people, don't confuse my kindness for weakness or my casualness for not being serious. Very intense on our business. I think servant leader would be a term. If I walk into a restaurant and tables are dirty, I just put my purse down. I clear the tables. Dishwasher's not there. I'll rack them, stack them, throw them through. They see me as a lead by example leader. I'm also incredibly thoughtful. I do know we have over 380 employees now. And if I walk in and I don't recognize or know someone, I say, hey, what's your name? Are you new here? No, I've been working here 6 months. Really? How did I not know you?
Yeah.
So, yeah. I've employees that have worked with me over 30 years. Many, probably 50 of our employees have worked with me over 10 years and then 20 years and 30 years. It's a very long time.
Yeah, I know. Like with my situation, I started the business. I think I'm just celebrating my 34th anniversary for my first agency. And a lot of the people are here. I mean, there's a lot of people who have been here for in their 20 years or 30 years. And then there's a lot of new folks. And it was interesting because as we grew as a company, I found, and with remote work or multiple offices, because we're in Atlanta, we're in Philadelphia, right? And then obviously in central Pennsylvania, in Harrisburg. And, you know, I really was bothering me that I didn't get to know the people or didn't know the people or didn't know sometimes if they worked for me or if they were walking in with the client. And that's, I was disgusted by that personally. And so I started doing this thing. It's three things. And I know it probably drives most of the company nuts, but I ask everybody to jot down in an email, three things on a Friday. What happened this week? Like not even about like work. It can be about work, but like good, bad, ugly. Like I found a new sushi restaurant. That's awesome. It's in Atlanta and I met this client and you know what? I had a great holiday with my family and I met my sister's boyfriend. Those like three things, real simple, and I love it. It takes, and I said in the beginning, I said, I can't promise I will answer every email, but I promise I'll read every email. And we have like 80 some people. And so far to this day, knock on wood, it's been going for probably 6 months now. I've answered absolutely every email and it takes, I know I need 4 hours of my life to do it, to focus on it, but I love it because I'm getting to know people better. I'm getting to learn about the business. I'm getting to learn about things that are not going right or things that are going right, what people are excited about or what I think they should be excited about that they're not. I mean, I learned so much. It's to me, it's been the most enlightening thing that I've done in years and I'm thrilled with it. So anyway, I love what you're saying of the servant leadership. I love the wanting to know everybody by name and understand who they are and what they're all about. And that's not easy. It's not easy. We have a lot, you know, like again, you have 8 locations. I mean, you know, it's hard to know everybody all the time and everything, you know?
So it's interesting you should say that. So, you know, I walk into a restaurant and I'll say, hey, how you doing? Or how's your kid? Or how's he doing in CSUN? Or how's he doing at, you know, Davis, whatever. And one guy was a Comic-Con crazy. I said, hey, there's a Comic-Con festival in LA. You going to that? And so my operations, like she says to me, she goes, how do you know that he likes Comic-Con? I said, I asked him, what do you like? Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just talk to people. I like to know about them. I'm very interested in people. Mm-hmm. I'd rather
be,
Warren Bennis once said, it's better to be interested than interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So get interested in the people that work with you. And I think you get a better connection.
I totally agree with you. So I mean, I want to jump into this real quick because I know we talked about your family. What's the best part of working in a family business and what's the hardest part?
Well, you know, a family business, the best part about it is you know everyone intimately, right? You know, as you mentioned earlier, the good, bad, and the ugly, you know what makes them tick. For many years, my parents sold the original Maria's in 1984. So I retained the rights to the name and I bought it and I grew the company. I had my brothers working with me, my sisters, and they were working for me. My mom was the consultant, Maria, and my dad, right? And they would say, you know, they could be brutal. My mother would walk in and she would say to someone like, that guy gets tipped. He should be slapped. He doesn't know what he's doing. Mom, you can't talk about that. Mom, you can't talk that way. I'm going to have to go to court saying my mother has Tourette's syndrome. She's out of control. Or she has Hoboken syndrome.
Yeah, there you go.
So that was very challenging. And, you know, to let people, this is my mom. This is who she is. You know, you can take the girl out of Hoboken. You can't take the Hoboken out of the girl.
Hoboken out of the girl. That's right.
Oh, my God. And my brother, Matthew, great, like really good, but, you know, temper, like really big temper. If someone would bring back a dish, he'd like, so it was very challenging. And then you get, you know, you work all day with these, you know, your family. And Sunday was very important to my family, the Sunday gravy afternoon. And I would you know, make time for that, but then I had to get back to the restaurant. And, you know, we could talk about things around the table. And it was normal, usually focused around the business, and then it would come back to personal. So kind of that, my brother, Matthew, my youngest, was, he was the hardest to separate. He couldn't separate, you know, Madeline, the boss versus Madeline, the sister. And he would bring it to the table. And I would just say to him, hey, we're not at work right now. Right now, you're my baby brother. And remember, I changed your diapers.
So, that's awesome. So okay, so you got 8 locations. How do you build consistent culture across all of them? How do you bring your personality, I'll say, or that servant leadership, the customers first? How do you bring that across 8 locations?
So, you know, having 8 restaurants is like having 8 children. Every restaurant has their own personality. Mm-hmm. They have their own, the customer base is mostly the same, but slightly different. Managers are different. They all have their own personality. So for me, it's leading by example, but also knowing how they react. So I may talk to, you know, James in Woodland Hills differently than I'm going to talk to Martine in Pasadena. I'm going to impart the same culture and what works. And I just, you know, when I see something, and I'll give you a small example. We had a special going from, I don't know, a lunch special, 11 to 4 or whatever. And this guy walks in, he puts down his newspaper and he goes to the bathroom, comes back. And maybe it was 3 and it was like 3:30. And the server says, I'm sorry, it's we can't serve you. And the guy was getting up. I said, excuse me. I said, is everything okay? He goes, no, she told me that I can't. The special is over. I said, have a seat, pal. I said, what's your name? John, have a seat. So I grabbed the young server and I said, do you have grandparents? Yeah. Do you like your grandparents? Oh, I love my grandparents. I said, well, anyone that comes in here, if your grandmother walked in, would you tell her, oh, I'm sorry, grandma, we can't serve you that special because it's 3:30? And she said, no. I said, treat everyone like your grandparent.
That's awesome.
So, you know, and culturally, James is a tough guy from Boston with a big Irish family. And like, okay, if you went into a bar, you want to be recognized. How do you feel about walking into that bar? And, you know, Martine's Hispanic culturally, and he grew up through the ranks at Maria's. Like, hey, how would your family greet you when you walk through the door, right? Are they just going to ignore you? And goes, hey, come on in. So it's all about making sure that the communication is lands the way they can hear it, because not everybody hears it the same way.
Sure. So like when you're hiring, like what do you look for first? I mean, are you looking for experience in the restaurant experience, or are you looking for attitude, their attitude, or a cultural fit with your culture? What are you looking for?
So I find that the most important thing in the hospitality industry is personality. Do you like people? You have to like people to be in this business. And skill set, we can teach you how to work a POS. We can teach you how to look at a P&L. Do I want someone that's worked in the restaurant industry? Yeah, we hired someone that's worked at a juice bar and they were phenomenal, you know, like a juice bar. There's not a lot of, but it's the interaction. I think it's really all about personality and attitude. Everyone has to have the right, and they have to be okay with, hey, you know what? The dishwasher didn't show up. We need to wash dishes, or the toilet backed up. You got to get that auger. I mean,
fix it.
It's ownership. You have to feel like I want what's best for everyone around me. And I always say our first customers are the people we work with. You have to respect the people you work with. And you have to respect what they do. And that's why when we do our training, I have everyone go through every position. Know what it's like to wash dishes. Know what it's like to sweep the curb outside. Know what it's like to, pick up some dirty plates from a table. We're not a, suit and coat kind of place, but I want everyone to feel that they're important. And if someone does not have that right attitude, that they like people and a genuine smile, someone doesn't smile, we're in trouble, right?
Yeah. It's funny. I had a conversation yesterday with a potential client, and we were talking about children, and her children were young, teens, but just, kind of high schoolish age. And they were asking me like, what, advice would you have? How do you, get them started? I said, this is going to sound crazy. I said, but I think, and I did this to my daughters, there's two things I think every child should do. Number one, work in a restaurant. That's number one, work in a restaurant. And number two is sell something. And I don't care if it's Girl Scout cookies. I don't care what it is. You sell something, like, kind of not have your parents sell it for you, but you sell something. And those two skills, I think, are like a PhD in business. Because again, to your point, you learn how to take care of people in a restaurant, and that's enormous. And just customer service, smiling, and that, that interaction, learning how to talk to people. I mean, all that stuff is huge. Simple, seems obvious, but it's huge.
That's great advice. And I didn't think about the selling part, but definitely working in a restaurant, retail, because communication skills. There are people that with the social media and the texting and the memes, communication has really, really changed.
Yeah. So one last thing on the business thing, and then we'll get into like some of the menu stuff and maybe have some more fun with this. So turnover stuff in restaurants, like, what have you done that's actually helped you keep good people? I mean, I talk to lots of restaurants. I mean, Vigor is our agency that markets and brands restaurants. I mean, we know all the issues that the restaurants have gone through. I mean, all the issues. In fact, I think you guys create them in California. That's where they start. You bring them east.
We invent everything that can possibly put a wrench in your operation in California, and then it spreads like COVID.
Yes, sure does. Right across the country.
That is why I'm on the California Restaurant Board and the National Restaurant Board, because I am hopeful that I can make a difference in some of the minds of the legislation to understand how critical it is to be to do the right thing by us and make it easier to do business. So you asked how I keep people and minimize turnover. A couple of things. First of all, we make sure that we treat everyone with respect and dignity. I started writing birthday cards by hand to every employee when I first opened in 1985. I had 10. Now I have significantly more, but I do that every month. I handwrite a card to every single employee to make them know that they're special and we're happy that they're there. For our management team, I would love everyone to have 2 days off. They don't work more than 10 hours. They don't work more than 5 days a week. And we work around their schedule. If there's something happening where they have a kids event, or I believe that if you don't come to Maria's to make a lot of money, if it's for the money, I always tell people, hey, work somewhere else. You're not going to buy a yacht working at Maria's. Well, you have a wonderful living. People have bought homes, many homes, and sent their kids to college. But it's all about giving them the opportunity to be themselves and giving them the time that they need to have. And I don't like to say work-life balance, because that's the big term, but what's important to them in their life? There's a person that needs Wednesdays off. They have to have Wednesdays off. So I said, okay, we make sure they have Wednesdays off.
That's great.
But that's what's important. It's really listening. And that's not just for the management team. That's for everyone. Our kitchen team, a lot of them are working two different shifts. And I recall one time I was walking by one of our guys. He goes, okay, well, it's my last day. I said, why? He said, because I can't get here on time. I said, well, what do you mean? He's, well, I'm scheduled for 4:30. And I said, okay. He said, but I can't get here at 4:30. I said, well, does the manager know that? So I walk in, I said, did you know that he can't get here at 4:30? Why are you scheduling him at 4:30? Schedule him at 5:30 or 5, whatever. He had another job. He couldn't get there. So he was always late. And so it's just about asking that question, what works for you? And if it doesn't work for the restaurant, no harm, no foul. We can't have that. I'm not saying you bend over backward. Right. It has to work for the restaurant first.
Sure.
And you can, you can work around schedules. And I think that's critical.
As much as possible.
And also, you know, really getting to know the people that you work with. I think that's why being human.
That's awesome. So let's talk about the good stuff here now. Food. All right. When people think of Maria's, what dishes come to mind?
Well, spaghetti and meatballs. We still roll our meatballs by hand. We used to make them with pork and beef. And then
that was my next question. I was just going to ask you if you put veal, pork, beef, whatever, you know, what all do you put in? Is it beef mostly?
Originally in the 80s, it was veal, pork, and beef. And then in California, it was no veal this meal. It was a big boycott. We took the veal out. Then there was an anti-pork thing about five, 6 years ago. I removed that. No, it's actually longer that I removed the pork. And so now they're all beef. And I said to my mother, I was like, oh, Mom, I got to take the pork out of the meatballs. And she goes, that's okay. I said, it's really okay. She goes, yeah, sometimes I would just use chopped meat if I didn't have the pork or the veal. I said, okay, great. Thanks. I got the blessing of my mother that I
there you go.
All beef meatballs. And so that's really, and we use really good pasta from Italy. We're using this DiMartino pasta. It's Granoro, you know, with the special dyes, and it's naturally dried. It's not quick dried. So, and we make our sauce with our marinara sauce with the Dinopoli tomatoes. They're the seeds from San Marzano, but they're locally grown in California. So they're not they're actually the relatives, you know, the grandchildren of the San Marzano tomatoes. So we've been doing that in fresh basil, very simple ingredients. And that's really sometimes the hardest thing to cook is a simple meal, but that's our number one dish.
I did a couple cooking classes in Italy, and it was amazing how simple they kept the ingredients, and they did make the meatballs were just beef. I mean, and because I was really expecting, because, you know, I'm Italian, so I was expecting my grandmother's to get the veal in there, the pork. I thought it'd be like this great secret recipe. It was beef. Very simple, very clean. And you know, San Marzano tomatoes. It was perfect.
Nice.
Perfect. So, yeah, that makes all the sense in the world. That's awesome. So, I mean, what are the next menu changes in the past? Like, you know, what's been working for you? What have you been doing? What's new? What's exciting?
So, you know, it's interesting when in the 80s, so I opened 85, California Pizza Kitchen opened right around the same time. And my dad was like, who's going to eat that kind of pizza? Who eats, you know, barbecue chicken pizza? I said, I don't know, Dad's pretty popular. So he said, we're never going to put that. You should never put that on your menu. And I'm thinking, okay. So the woman, Gail, who started Gail's Barbecue Sauce, she was the first one to sell the barbecue sauce to the CPK guys. And she came into my restaurant in Woodland Hills. This is in the 80s. And she goes, I think you should make a barbecue chicken pizza. I'm like, I don't know. I don't think my parents are going to be really thrilled about that. I said, but let me see if we can make a really good barbecue chicken pizza. So I bought their pizza and we just did a little twist on it. We grilled the barbecue chicken instead of like baking it. And then we used that sauce and really good red onions. And so with cilantro, which is another issue that we had a huge issue mistaking cilantro for parsley. And I'll tell you about that because it looks like Italian parsley. Oh my God, it's horrible if it goes in marinara sauce accidentally, which happened. So we put that on the menu. My dad said, that'll never sell. And it's very popular. And then we made a barbecue chicken salad. It's not Italian, it's California. But as my dad taught me, and I reminded him, hey, Dad, you said if three or more people ask for something, you put it on the menu. So we got a lot of requests. So, yeah.
That's awesome. So let's talk about the best of. Okay, so what, and you know, everyone's got a favorite. Like, even though you're not supposed to have a favorite kid, you really do deep down any given day. So what's your favorite appetizer right now?
For me personally or for the-
At your restaurant.
Okay, so the most popular is the mozzarella marinara, the fried mozzarella. Mm-hmm. That's the most popular. I like the zucchini fritti because I like the crunchiness and the softness of the zucchini. So, and I have to tell you, bar none, our calamari fritti is the best. We get compliments from everyone. So, but
that's
me
awesome.
Personally, I like zucchini fritti, the most popular mozzarella marinara. Or
What's
fried mozzarella as it's on the menu.
Yeah, yeah. What's the best salad?
Chopped Italian salad that we created in, actually it was my little invention. One of the first dishes I created at Maria's on my own, no meat. It's chopped iceberg lettuce, nice crunch with garbanzos. And we don't buy canned garbanzos. We buy the big sack of dried garbanzos and mm-hmm. we cure them ourselves. So there's no sulfites and they're really fresh and delicious. Carrots, cucumbers, mozzarella, very simple, grape tomatoes cut in half, chopped up. And it's a beautiful salad. It's our most popular salad.
Awesome. Best pasta dish.
Well, spaghetti marinara is really the best pasta dish. It's just clean.
That's your favorite?
I usually get it. Actually, my favorite is I like the pappardelle bolognese. Mm-hmm. So it's our meat sauce with mushrooms. Mm-hmm. That's my Excellent. Favorite. If you're asking me my favorite, mm-hmm. the most popular, they're different.
But yeah,
I love
that's all right.
I love the hearty. I love that. Like when it's cold, which is rare in California. Mm-hmm. But I love that dish. It's a very hearty dish.
All right. Best chicken or seafood dish?
Okay. Chicken, bar none. Chicken Parmesan, my favorite. Perfect. I had it last night. Love it. The best.
Seafood?
Seafood, I am a shrimp fra diavolo girl. Mm. I like the spiciness of the, we put a little red pepper in there. That's my favorite pasta dish. We sell a lot of clams, but I don't know. I'm not a clam girl. I just.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll be honest. You know, it's funny you say that. I love fra diavolo, and I don't do the clam sauce very often in Italian dishes. It's like, it's okay, but I like fra diavolo. The red sauce is much better. Best pizza.
Oh, we make my favorite pizza is our Pizza Bianchi, which is fresh spinach sauteed with oil and garlic on mozzarella baked. It is so delicious. And if you want to make it as a breakfast pizza, crack a couple of eggs before you put it in the oven. Oh my God, it's so delicious. It's great as an appetizer and it's my favorite pizza.
What's the best dessert?
Well, our best dessert, if you're asking me what, we make all of our desserts from scratch. So we make our tiramisu, we make our own sponge, we don't buy the lady fingers, and we cold brew the espresso so it's not as bitter. We make everything from that is an amazing, delicious dish and a dessert. And we sell a lot of that. My favorite is our apple crumble because I love apple pie. And we make that from, we have a butter crust and we cook the pippin apples with real butter, real sugar and vanilla. And I got to tell you, and we make our crumble from scratch. It is so delicious with a scoop of vanilla bean ice cream.
That's great. So what best overall dish? If you only had to pick one thing, I'm coming in there one time, I'm sitting down, it's lunch or whatever it is, dinner. What is the one thing I have to eat?
Wow. If you're coming in for lunch, I would say have the chopped Italian salad with crispy chicken sesame on top. That's what I have. It's great. It's light enough, but it's got that protein on it. For dinner, I always tell people if it's their first time at Maria's, order the chicken parmesan. My friends love the chicken marsala, but we do everything from it. You mentioned something about limited time offer things. So in one of those like limited time. So we make at Christmas time we make brajol, and we're really the only restaurant in Los Angeles that makes it. It's the beef, it's pounded, the Parmesan, you roll it, you braise it, and we serve that with the rigatoni. And we only make that one time a year. And people say, why don't you have it every time? It's special. And I think some dishes are meant just to be special.
That's awesome. Yeah. So in your mind, what sets Maria's apart from other Italian restaurants?
Well, I think we're true to our roots. We are truly a Southern Italian, Hoboken restaurant. And I think that over the years, people trends come and go. We've been in business for 52 years in Los Angeles. Wow. That's like a gazillion years anywhere else in America. And I think it's really important just to maintain the culture and the quality of food. I really focus on the taste, how it looks, how it tastes, and making sure that we don't change the recipes, the original recipes especially, because I think that's critical. And people, it's how people feel when they walk in Maria's. Make them feel like they're going into their grandma's favorite restaurant or their grandma's kitchen. And we have five, now six generations of families coming into Maria's.
I mean, that's fantastic. People in there. I love the idea of comfort food, you know, Italian comfort food. That's a great way to position it, because that's what it is. And it's phenomenal. So, all right. So marketing moves fast. And I know you jumped into the social media bandwagon early. You do a phenomenal job. I see you all the time. Okay. So congratulations. So, I mean, how has Maria's evolved over the last 5 or 10 years in marketing?
So, you know, we started, loyalty is really, really big in marketing. I would say that I'm very involved in our marketing. Years ago, we did, it was word of mouth, right? So, you know, in the 80s, we didn't have the digital marketing and you had newspaper, print, and maybe mailers. So I would mail out menus. I didn't mail out offers. I just would mail out our menu. I figure if people see the menu, it's going to make them hungry. They're going to come in. I didn't have to offer anything. So we've evolved from mailers, email marketing, some, you know, social media, digital marketing. And then I found recently, Michael, that the best thing is print, sending a postcard, because no one gets mail anymore.
No one's doing it. Yeah.
If you get something in the mail other than a bill, no one even gets bills anymore. So we do a nice postcard, a couple of offers to get people in. We used to do a brunch. So it's a lunch, dinner, maybe a takeout offer, because there's so much new buildings going on in our areas. In the areas, they're building a lot of apartments and condos. And what I found is, when I query the people that I work with, I said, which way do you drive to work every day? And the people take the same route. So you can be living in a neighborhood that's a mile away from Maria's and never see it because you don't pass it. And if you don't get something, a notice, and if you're not already on our email list or already in our social media, how are you going to know about us? So my focus this year is quarterly sending out postcards just to remind people and a menu. So one might be a menu. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really, really critical for people. And obviously, you know, I'm going to be doing some more LinkedIn posts just as, you know, thought leadership posts. But for me, it's fun. I love doing those videos.
That's awesome. So, I mean, what brings people back? Like, if you had to like identify what brings people back again and again, is it the food? Is it a service, the value, the overall experience? What is it that's the secret, quote unquote, secret sauce?
Well, I'll tell you a quick story of what just happened and really epitomizes why people come back to Maria's. So a longtime customer, I get an email from, hey, Maddie, you know, we go to your restaurant, your Sherman Oaks restaurant every Tuesday. And it was New Year's Eve and we knew that you were open till 9 o'clock and we showed up at 8:30 and they said that you closed early and you're only available for takeout. I said, really, Mark? I said, let me check it out. Well, it turns out we had a new employee working there who maybe wanted to get home early. I don't know the circumstance, but he turned the customer away. So I did a little research and I called him back. I mean, emailed him. I said, hey, Mark, I said, I'm so sorry. It was a new employee. They didn't know. They didn't understand the culture. Please, when are you going to be back in the restaurant? He goes, well, we'll be back there on Tuesday with my partner and we're going to come in. I said, okay. So I went to the restaurant and I talked to all of the team that was there. I went on Tuesday night. So I talked to the same team that was there. And I said, you know, and as I walked up, there were all these leaves on the curb, you know, because it was windy. So I brought my team out and I said, hey, I said, this doesn't really welcome people to our restaurant. So let's get a broom. I would have swept it myself, but get a broom. I said, and now they're going to be coming in tonight. And I want you to make sure they feel very welcome and take care of them. Put whatever you buy their dinner for them. So I get an email yesterday. So this was Tuesday. I get an email yesterday. Dear Maddie, you know, when we first started going to Maria's, we came for the food. And now you reminded me of why we always come back. It's how you make us feel when we walk through that door.
Awesome.
We feel like it's part of their neighborhood. It's their neighborhood Italian kitchen. And that really describes why we have people coming back. We listen, we really, it's very different than any other restaurant. And if I don't see someone walking someone to the door when they leave or saying goodbye, thank you so much, see you again, genuinely, right? Like genuinely mean it. And that's what I do. And that's, I believe
that's
fantastic. I'm hoping that that happens in all the restaurants
everywhere. Yeah.
I'm not going to bet my life on it, but that's my hope.
That's interesting. I mean, it's phenomenal, and that's how it should be. My brother-in-law has a local restaurant, and truly his restaurant, he's Greek. My wife's Greek. So his restaurant's like the community center. People go there after church. People go there before they go to the soccer game. People go there, you know, after a funeral. People go there. It's just the community center. He knows pretty much everybody by name. Every kid walks up and asks for a lollipop. So it's an incredible way to be, and it's a super smart way to handle your business. So, excuse me, one last question, and I'm going to ask you not to pick your restaurant on this one. So we talked about your food, but if you had one final meal, what would you eat and why?
So it would be the bresaol with rigatoni. It's a very heavy dish. It takes a really long time to eat it, so I'll extend my life a little bit. but it's really a very special. It just reminds me of Christmas and family being together. And it would be Christmas Day because you can't eat meat on Christmas Eve. But so really that would be my favorite. Maria's.
That's awesome. It's so cool. Like too, like, you know, I'm Italian. I grew up, obviously Italian family. And my grandmother on Easter used to make a special veal dish. And, you know, it was a big deal because, I mean, you know, that family didn't have a lot of money and veal was expensive and it was like a thing. But this veal, I can still taste, I can still remember it from when I was a child. Like that always happened every Easter. It's so neat to have like your bresaol, like be a part of a family tradition or a time of year. It just brings it all back to family and just really what it's all about, the culture and just, family and food is love in Italians, right? It's like, it's a way of showing love. So it's just phenomenal. So congratulations.
Was it a stuffed veal breast? Did your grandmother make the stuffed veal breast?
No, it wasn't stuffed. It wasn't stuffed.
Because mom would make it was like the veal, but not the veal chops, not the really expensive part.
It was just pounded out. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Maybe it was stuffed. Maybe it was stuffed. Maybe it was wrapped in with the string. It was so long ago, but I remember just that we would eat this veal. It was such a big deal, you know, in our lives. So it's cool. Well,
nice,
Maddie, thank you. You know, you're a force of nature. I've known you for a long time. Congratulations on all your success, and I know you're going to make California better by being on the board. So, well done.
Thank you so much, and it's always such a pleasure to see you. Every time I see you at our events, a big smile comes over my face. You're such a wonderful human being. You've got great energy, and it really shows with all the things that you do too.
Thanks. Very cool.